Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is Philip Coyle, who was Associate Director for National Security and International Affairs in the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy and Assistant Secretary of Defense and Director of Operational Test and Evaluation in the Department of Defense. With 40 years' experience in national security research, development, and testing matters, he is currently a Senior Science Fellow at the Center for Arms Control and Nonproliferation and the co-author of The Challenges of Nuclear Nonproliferation. Welcome to Background Briefing, Philip Coyle.
Good to be with you.
And it would seem to me the situation with North Korea has gone so far beyond non-proliferation. Clearly, they have tested an H-bomb, and they've even threatened recently to test one in the Pacific, perhaps lobbing one on the tip of an ICBM. And I don't know quite exactly how they would explode it and where, but now things seem to have gotten out of hand on the political level in terms of leadership. And it seems that President Trump's taunting Kim Jong-un has resulted in a situation where, in many ways, the U.S. is looking as the aggressor and North Korea like the victim. And that's pretty much what their foreign minister says today, that he says that Trump has actually declared war on them by saying they are not going to be around much longer. Well, you could actually interpret that way. It's like going back to the early days of the Reagan administration in terms of the Cold War with the Soviet Union, where there was talk of ending up on the ash heap of history, which the old geriatrics in the Kremlin took literally. And decapitation strategies that Cap Weinberger talked about, they took that personally. So is that what's happening now? We're having a repeat of the worst kind of brinksmanship that we experienced in the Cold War?
Yes, I think it is. Or you could say it's like eighth graders on the playground taunting each other. And in a way, North Korea didn't have to say that this was a declaration of war. A lot of people don't realize that the Korean War has never officially ended. Technically, the Korean War is just at a stalemate. We agreed to an armistice, to a ceasefire, but the war was never ended with a peace treaty.
So do you think that the U.S. is going to continue to fly bombers? The last time they flew the B-1 bombers with fighter escorts, normally they do it around just below the DMZ, but this last time apparently they took these bombers up the coast, obviously off the 12-mile limit, but they still clearly were painted by North Korean radar. So do you think we're going to be doing that again?
I don't know. And as the foreign minister said today, under the current conditions, with it appearing that the United States is declaring war, they would feel justified in shooting down one of those B-1 B-bombers.
So if you were in the Pentagon and in the White House, what would your advice be, Phil Coyle?
Well, I'm not sure it would be heated the way things are going, but one of the things I would say would be, remember that we successfully achieved two agreements with North Korea, one to stop their nuclear program, which was effective for several years. In 94, that agreement lasted for several years. North Korea followed it, obeyed it. And we also reached a separate agreement to stop their long-range missile programs, an agreement that William Perry, former Secretary of Defense William Perry, had negotiated. Both of those agreements held for a while until political changes in the United States basically undermined them and they fell apart. But I think the first thing that the administration, current administration, needs to recall is that we did reach these agreements, so we know it's possible. It would be more difficult now because North Korea is much farther along. And in a way, we have wasted 15 years not talking to them, which North Korea has used to do more and more missile tests and now six underground nuclear tests.
So what was their earlier threat about detonating an H-bomb in the Pacific? Do you think that's sort of now on the back burner because it's been preempted by the declaration of war against the United States?
Not necessarily. You know, it may have been bluster along with all of the other bluster, but I don't think it's necessarily off the table. It certainly would get everybody's attention. You know, it would be a huge thing. There would be radioactive fallout. As President Trump himself said, the path of that follow would be a path where you could track increased cancers. But I don't think it's necessarily off the table. For example, when China first became a nuclear power, the United States poo-pooed their capabilities and kept saying that they weren't a real nuclear power, not like us. Again, like kids on the playground. And China took that seriously, and they did a test where they launched a nuclear weapon on the end of a missile, simply to prove that they could do it and to get the rest of the world, especially including the United States, to take them seriously.
But the idea, though, of the North Koreans firing an ICBM and then having it go into a terminal phase somewhere in the Pacific, and I don't know how they'd warn ships and planes to get out of the way, and then detonating it atmospherically, which I understand was pretty much the assumption of what they're doing. That's pretty advanced technology, isn't it? Do you think they have that capability?
Well, I don't know for sure. Some of the missile tests they've done have been flawed, and one of their most recent tests in July appeared to break up on reentry. We have grainy television footage from Japan that makes it look like that missile, which was not carrying a real warhead, of course, broke up on reentry. So it appears they haven't solved all the problems that one needs to solve in order to have a viable, offensive missile-based nuclear program. But certainly time is not on our side. They are making progress.
Well, they could put a nuclear weapon on a fishing trawler and run it aground in Santa Monica Bay and blow up Los Angeles.
Well, that too. So, yes, I think we have to be worried about North Korea having these capabilities, because there's more than one way to use them, as you say.
But at this point, the one factor that always strikes me as extraordinary in this, you talk about 8-year-old schoolboys taunting each other in the playground. The one thing that seems to be cavalierly ignored by President Trump are the South Koreans and the collateral damage to up to 10 million South Koreans in Seoul, maybe even more, with a conventional attack, which the North Koreans have a hair trigger preparation for. Even on top of that, President Trump has threatened to tear up the U.S.-South Korea trading deal. You'd think, if anything, we'd be bending over backwards to accommodate the fears of the South Koreans that they were going to end up the collateral damage in this schoolyard spat between Trump and Kim.
Yes, I didn't understand why President Trump would want to pick a fight with our friend and ally, South Korea, at a time when we need their help most in dealing with North Korea. The president seems to have a tendency to do that. A different example is threatening to tear up the Iran nuclear deal, which I think is a very important agreement and has basically blocked Iran from getting nuclear weapons for as long as both sides sustain the agreement. But President Trump has picked a fight about that also. And it wasn't so very long ago that people used to say, well, there's no point in even trying to get an agreement with Iran. Iran will never agree to an agreement like this. Well, they did, just as in the past North Korea did also. So again, I want to say, we know it's possible. We've reached agreements like this with Iran and with North Korea twice. And as long as we're willing to sustain them, they help protect the United States.
So is there any scenario where you could, I recall Stephen Bannon's remarks in the interview that he did with the American Prospect that apparently got him fired or contributed to getting him fired from the White House, where he said there's no way you can have a war with North Korea because South Korea is within artillery range, and you'd wipe out Seoul. So they've got us. Now, that happened shortly after Trump made his threat of fire and fury like the world has never seen, and that apparently did get Kim's attention, and he was a little, he backed off a little bit. But then when Bannon made those remarks, then that undercut Trump, and so they were back at it, insulting each other. But so in terms of the extent to which, as Bannon says, they've got us, which is that the civilians in Seoul are held hostage, is there any way that the U.S. could remove that threat and the threat to U.S. civilians and military as well? Could you evacuate Seoul? My assumption would be that the minute you started to evacuate Seoul, the North Koreans would figure the U.S. is about to preemptively strike.
I think it's very difficult. It's like saying, could we evacuate New York or Chicago or Los Angeles? You know, I suppose it's technically possible, but...
certainly not at rush hour, right?
Yes.
Right. Yeah, well, it is obviously. I mean, it's an insane situation, but this is not out of the realm of possibility, is it? When you've got two people playing nuclear chicken, both of whom seem to have impulse control problems, and one of whom has indicated he's prepared to kill his uncle, his brother, using anti-aircraft artillery to blow people apart in public executions, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, he's got some acts to back up his tough rhetoric. I'm not sure that Trump has, certainly there's no indication that Trump is quite as brutal, but he seems to be pretty loose with his tongue.
Well, today in the White House press briefing, Sarah Huckabee Sanders said that to think that President Trump had declared a war on North Korea was absurd. She emphasized that was absurd. And that may be helpful in toning down the back and forth fight. And I've been very hopeful from the way Secretary of State Rex Tillerson has handled himself. And in particular, he has said publicly and through diplomatic channels to North Korea that we're not interested in causing their regime to fail. We're not interested in attacking them, and that they should not feel threatened by the United States. And for a Republican administration, that's quite an interesting thing for the Secretary of State to say. In some past Republican administrations, the United States was much more hostile towards North Korea via the State Department and the rest of government. So I've been impressed with Secretary of State Tillerson and how some of the things he said about not wanting to attack or to have a fight with North Korea could be quite helpful.
Right, but again, isn't that undercut by his boss who speaks for the United States, the President of the United States, Donald Trump, who said in Huntsville, Alabama, at the Wernher von Braun Center, I might add, he said that they're not going to be around. He talked about both the North Korean country and the leadership. They're not going to be around much longer. How else could you interpret those words?
Yes, and he also said, we're going to handle it, whatever that meant.
Right.
Several times he says, we're going to handle that situation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think the question is it going to be two steps forward and one step back, or one step forward and two steps back? Through the Secretary of State, through regular diplomatic channels, with the help of North Korea and Japan and China, I think we can make progress here. And the fact that we've been able to do it in the past, I think, shows that we can do it again. Will it be easy? Not at all. Will it be much harder than in the past? Yes, because North Korea has made so much progress, they won't want to give up the progress they've made with rockets and missiles and nuclear weapons. But I think we really have no other choice.
Well, just in closing, there is some echoes, or at least there's an article by Steve Cole harking back to 1969 when President Richard Nixon unleashed B-52 bombers over North Vietnam because he was frustrated with the obstinate North Korean negotiators, because he wanted to get out of the war and they wanted it on their terms, not on Nixon's terms. So he decided to unleash B-52s, and he wanted to also signal to the Soviets that he was a little crazy.
Yeah.
Nixon told Haldeman, I call it the madman theory. We just slipped the word to them that, for God's sakes, you know, Nixon is obsessed about communism. We can't restrain him, and he is angry, and he has his hand on the nuclear button. So Nixon used the idea that I'm a madman. Obviously, it didn't necessarily work, but I'm not sure that this president we have now is, I think he's sincere in his recklessness and is an unguided missile, as opposed to cold and calculating like Nixon was.
Well, and I think some of the president's threats are also designed to try to move China. He's been, by all reports, he's been frustrated that China has not been more immediately helpful. China, of course, is famous in international policy for being incredibly patient, willing to take a very long time to consider things. And the president, from what we hear, is very frustrated with that.
Well, Philip Coyle, I suppose we should stay in touch. I'm not about to go into the bomb shelter, but this definitely is something that we don't need. And, you know, we've got some serious problems. The people in Puerto Rico, for example, are suffering greatly, and our president is running around insulting football players and North Koreans. But none of this rhetoric sounds like it's particularly helpful in terms of solving real-world problems.
Yes, I don't think we need to pick any more fights. We've picked quite enough, I think. You listed them there, and I don't think we need to pick any more.
Well, I thank you for joining us, Philip Coyle.
My pleasure.
And again, I've been speaking with Philip Coyle, who was Associate Director for National Security and International Affairs in the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy and Assistant Secretary of Defense and Director of Operational Test and Evaluation in the Department of Defense. With 40 years' experience in national security research, development, and testing matters, he is currently a Senior Science Fellow at the Center for Arms Control and Nonproliferation and the co-author of The Challenges of Nuclear Nonproliferation. We're going to take a restoration break and we'll be back looking into Sunday's extraordinary display of solidarity and indignation expressed by NFL players and owners in response to Trump's crude attack on Colin Kaepernick.